This episode of Enough About Me is brought to you by our great friends at Milton's. At Milton's, you'll be as comfortable in our stores as you'll be in our clothes. South Shore Plaza Braintree, which I'm sure is a great location, but my location is Chestnut Hill Square, Chestnut Hill. And also today, by the way, by HelloFresh. Thanks to HelloFresh for supporting Enough About Me. You can receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Minahan30. Again, HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Minahan30. All right, another repeat guest, Tom E. Carney. He was on one of the earlier ones, I think one of the first, maybe five or six, I don't know. He's back again. He's got a book to promote that comes out next month. It'll be next month. This is come out at the end of September with Julian Edelman. I actually enjoyed this conversation with Curran a lot. I didn't think our first one was great. I was still trying to figure it out. Wasn't sure what to do. I was much more comfortable this time with Tom. We had a good talk. We talked about the book covering the Patriots. We talked about Brady. Talked about a lot of stuff. I talked about the show he's on right now at Comcast, my issues I have with them. Go through the whole thing. I actually enjoyed this a lot. Some suck. Some are really good. This is a good one with Tommy Carney. He's got this book with Julian Edelman coming out next month. I should look that up right now. I'm going to look it up right now.
Relentless.
What's that?
Relentless.
Relentless. Sorry, don't yell at me. Relentless. Tommy Carney with Julian Edelman. That comes out when? Let me see. Twitter, Tommy Carney. Pin tweet. Relentless. It's Carney's fucking tweet doesn't have the. Are you right?
No.
Oh, okay. October 24th. Look at you battling through a stomach ailment. You still got it right, Ben. Look at you. Good for you. Gold star for you. That's why you produce the best radio show in America. October 24th. Relentless. Julian Edelman, a memoir with Tom E. Carney. When that book comes out, I'm going to tell you to get it because I'm sure we know Carney does a great job. He joins us right now on Enough About Me.
All right, so the book is called Indispensable.
Relentless.
Relentless.
Can't live without him.
Relentless. Relentless until a preseason game comes along, and then he blows out his knee.
No, he continued to be relentless in that game, which
he did.
Is why he blew out the knee.
Is that what happened? So when you're Tommy Carney, and you write the book Relentless with Julian Edelman, which comes out November 25th.
October 24th.
October 24th. Fine, October 24th. Little Brown Publications.
Hatchet
Publications, October 24th. How many books is this for you?
This is the first.
The first. That
my maiden voyage.
Does it matter at all that the subject of the book blows out his knee in the preseason before the book comes out? Do you even care about that? Do you think about that when it happens?
Yeah, no, absolutely, because you tried to make it as current as possible.
Right.
We agreed to do this book at the end of May, and we compressed everything between May and July 20th into his life story, his parents' life story to an extent. And you wanted to be as current as possible, up to and including him being in Montana with Brady. And you leave the book in a particular way. He leaves the book in a particular way. And so much of the book has been about his mortality, his football mortality and fighting to stay in the NFL.
Yeah.
And then, boom, he suffers an injury that certainly is going to have him staring at his navel even more.
We'll get back to that in a second. Do you think at all, and I'm not saying it is, I'm not editorializing here, God knows, do you think that we're at the point in somebody's life when they're 28? 28?
He's
30? 31 now. He's 31 now, that's right.
Yeah, it's a whole different animal, I know what you
do. Do we need to write a biography of this man? Did an autobiography need to be written?
It wasn't necessarily my call.
He pitched
we've
you.
We've seen, the publisher did.
Okay.
The publisher did, and then the publisher pitched the agent. And, you know, when you look at his story.
That's a great story, obviously.
It's bizarre, too. It's got a lot of bizarre hooks to it. I think it's more current because of what he's done. So I see what you're saying. It's called a memoir.
I apologize.
No. I'm just saying the fact that it's called a memoir, that's kind of like, you know,
point is
normally
he's not,
what you're looking we're not, back we're not on dealing, 70 years.
We're not dealing with Eli Wiesel here is my point.
No.
No. I don't
no,
think.
No.
No.
No. But if there's application to what the kid experienced,
sure.
And he thinks that other people could use it, might as well write it and strike while the iron's hot when people will pick it up and see if somebody gets something out of it.
Are you, so you're doing your TV show, you're doing your writing, you're doing all your stuff, and you get a call from Hatchet saying that they want you to write a book about Julian Edelman?
They actually started with Holly, because Holly had written a number of books with Hatchet, and they reached out to Mike and said, do you have any contact with Julian Edelman? We think he might be a good
right
topic.
Yeah.
And Mike said, look, you know, just finished two books. I do know somebody who knows him pretty well, so had to reach out to me and asked if I could get them in contact with Julian's reps, which are the same as Jimmy Garoppolo's and Tom Brady's. So I got them in touch with them and kind of just waited.
Well, is there a point, though? So you wanted to do it right away.
I was always daunted by it. I've always wanted to write a book, not necessarily an as-told to, but this I figured was a very good way to start.
What did you want to do, like espionage, like spy novel?
Or you know what? I don't know, man.
You were not only thinking
sports.
Not a spy
novel, but I think, like in 2007, I was very close to writing a book on that team prior to the season, kind of a chronicle of 2017.
With some actual cooperation in season from the coaching staff?
I was requesting it. Oh, okay. I was in the process, okay. And I was dealing with a publisher. At that point, I had three kids who were
young,
7, 8, and 9, and I was at NBC, and it just started there. And I just don't think I'm just an anxious prick, and I couldn't have dealt with it.
Right.
And I finally said, you know what, I'm not going to be able to do a good job on this.
Okay.
And they turned out to have a pretty good year that year.
Not bad.
Hindsight being 2020, might have been a swing and a miss.
No.
But I've always wanted to do a book, because I read, as you do, voraciously.
Yes.
So it's this... landed there, and they said, would you like to do it? And I said, you know what? Don't be a pussy about it. Do it.
Okay, you say I'm not going to be a pussy. You decide to do it, and then Edelman wants you to do the book. You have a point. You got your correspondent with Edelman, and you begin writing in May, you said?
We began meeting in very early June.
When do you start writing? When's the book done? I mean, when is the agreement made to write a book?
About,
you're done...
About 5/25. Tom, will you write a book with us?
May 25th.
Yeah.
Of this year?
Yeah.
Jesus. So you start talking to Edelman a couple weeks later.
Within the week, probably around 6/3 or so like
do
that.
Do you go and see him? Or are you talking to us all on the phone?
Some time. We did a lot of time at his condo.
So how long is he... How many hours do you interview him for?
I would say 40.
40 hours. You transcribe the whole thing yourself?
Nope. Climb that out.
Good. Who'd you have do that?
A variety of son's girlfriends.
Okay. Oh, really?
My wife came in flying in at the end.
Okay.
And one of my buddies from work.
Okay. So you do all at Phil Perry?
Give
him a little work?
No.
No? Okay, fine. Did you thank him in the book?
Yes.
Okay. Did you thank me in the book?
Not yet. This will be in the paperback. In the paperback, it will be.
Curious move on your part. So you do the whole thing. So you pour through 40 hours of this. You go through all the transcript. How long is the book?
288 pages.
Is it like a bullshit 288 pages where the words are this big?
They're well spaced out.
They're well spaced out. So in reality, it's like about 40 pages.
No. It's a long-ass book. Here's the interesting thing about
it. Is it an I, first person?
It is I.
Okay.
It's I.
It's a weird writing I for another person?
Yeah, because if you're going to fill 288 pages, you need to be bridging in between the points and the stories and the anecdotes and the recollections.
Right.
So you got to I things that he didn't necessarily say. I think that the people understand that's how an as-told-to works.
Yes.
So... you know, when he tells me about a game against Toledo when he was at, Kent State.
Right.
He's going to tell me in general about that game, but I'm going to have to turn that into the full context. So there's a little of that stuff going on.
You probably should have talked to me before you wrote this.
Why?
Because I'm telling you, the worst part of biographies, the worst part are like the real, real prelude. You didn't go super prelude.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, when you read books like...
there is no prelude.
What's your favorite biography ever written?
Probably The Last Lion. Churchill?
The Churchill one? Okay, that's a good one. But, you know, like...
The Springsteen one sucked, by the way.
What?
I read the Springsteen one.
Yeah, but you don't believe... We've talked... You don't like Bruce that much. You're kind of a bullshit Bruce fan. You told me...
No. I parachuted off of Bruce when he started to turn into a caricature.
Well, when was that?
I would say 88.
Tunnel of Love is a great record.
Please.
Well, it's a great divorce record.
I'm going to go through.
The guy's going through a lot. You don't like Ghost of Tom Joad? The Rising?
The Rising.
Magic you don't like? That's a great record.
The earlier shit.
Anyway, I read
Keith Richards' biography, which was
great.
Unfreaking believable.
Yeah, but how is that possible?
Compared to Bruce Hastings.
I agree with you, but how did you remember that detail, Keith Richards? How is that possible?
He stopped using drugs in 71.
I mean, how was that? Do you remember? Are you one of those people?
It was a stunt.
Do you remember things when you were a kid?
Yeah, I remember my kid stuff, but it's...
No, not your kid stuff.
I remember my personal shit. Like, my first recollection is when I was about 3. I've heard people say they remember stuff from like 18 months. I'm like, no, you don't.
But you don't remember a lot of stuff from first grade.
I do. But I don't remember anything that's happened in the last 10 years.
Nothing?
Very little.
Really?
Yeah, it scares me.
It's probably... probably good given some of your work the last 10 years.
No doubt.
Just to move on from
that.
We'll get back to Karin and his unbelievable ability to remember things. He was 3 years old in a minute and get more to the book and some Brady stuff as well. But we're going to take a minute here to talk about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes. Probably not. Probably the word is recipes. With step-by-step instructions. Each recipe is designed to take around 30 minutes to make in your kitchen. The recipes are set up so that anyone can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in 30 minutes. By the way, if you have kids like Kate's age, my daughter Kate, who's 10, she enjoys the entire process. The making of it, gets to see what goes in, and then she gets to enjoy the meal that she made herself at the end. I'm telling you, if you have kids, I'm going to say 8, 10 and up, cannot go wrong. They source the freshest ingredients, measure to the exact quantities needed so there's no food wasted. Everything is deliverable to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box. Less than $10 per meal, by the way. And I've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they are offering everyone in our audience $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Minahan30. I've enjoyed the experience. You know, I talked about it. I've talked about it a lot. You can get anything you want there. You can make whatever you want. And again, it's something you can do with your kids. It's not going to be a pain. You'll enjoy the process. That's HelloFresh.com. Use code Minahan30. Get $30 off your first week of deliveries. You'd be nuts not to try with that deal. $30 off. You got to do it. And now our friends at Milton's. You know, I love Milton's. Milton's the best place out there. We've been sponsoring us since day one. We appreciate it. We love them. If you're a groom-to-be, by the way, you know, everyone's looking at the bride. That's fine. But you deserve some attention as well. My friend Dana Katz in Milton's, the store for men, agrees. He says nothing looks better on the groom than a custom suit from Jack Victor and a custom shirt from Stant. Three quick measurements is all it takes to match you to one of 99 sizes for a perfect fit. That's a guarantee. Whether you like an ultra slim fit, a modern fit, or you want to do a riff on your own style, custom is the way to go for your big day. The experts, and they are experts in Milton. If you're like me, you know nothing about clothes. You walk in, they will make you look great and feel great. They're going to put a groomsman in a sharp suit, maybe one of the famous buy one, get one free deals. It's so popular with wedding parties that tie everyone's together with the perfect tie or pocket square. So you look extra special in your suit, and the guys, including the dad, ring bearer, all of them look great too. That's why they say, and they say it, and it's true, at Milton's you'll be as comfortable in our stores as you'll be in our clothes. South Shore Plaza Braintree and Chestnut Hill Square, Chestnut Hill.
We'll fight about the Springsteen book later, but I'm sure you won't do this with Edelman. I'm guessing. You're a smart guy. When I read some of these books sometimes and they talk about, like, everybody loved that Lindbergh book a couple of years, 15 years ago. Remember that book? And it's one of those books where they talk about, like, his grandparents' lineage. And you're like, can we just fucking get to the part where he starts flying around?
Okay. But here's what was interesting. And I did have too much of that in there initially.
Like, you go into, like, the Edelman family lineage?
Yes. Because it was relevant.
Well, how was it relevant? What his great-grandfather did?
Good question.
Okay.
It's especially relevant because this book is relevant in a father-son way. Because his father was a maniac.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And admits that and acknowledges that and said, I made a lot of mistakes with the kid. I was way too hard on him and some of the stuff I'm embarrassed by.
Yeah.
But why was his dad like that? His dad was like that, and this was, we trimmed it back. His mom and dad were completely polar opposites in the way that they were raised. And his dad's mother, this is what's freaky, is she lived in Oklahoma and she had three children.
This is his grandmother.
This is Julian's grandmother.
Right.
All three were deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point in the 50s, they were probably going to be committed.
Right, institutionalized.
So Julian's grandmother decided she didn't want to do that, so being in Oklahoma, there were only two places she could go. She could either go to San Francisco or New York to find a school for the deaf and dumb.
Right.
Or deaf and, yeah.
Well, back then they called it deaf and
dumb.
They
could, and that's why I referred to that, because they had that. She basically packed up, left her husband, and moved to California with her three deaf kids.
Right.
To raise them in California and put them in a school in Berkeley.
See, that's
while there,
right,
she met a guy named John Edelman, who fathered Frank Edelman, Julian's father. John Edelman was never a part of Frank's life. The only time he recalls seeing him was when he was in his casket.
Right.
And as a result, Frank basically grew up like a feral child.
Yeah.
His three older deaf brothers and sisters were away.
Right.
His mother was working and or kind of just out on the town. She was kind of a fun lady.
Right.
So Frank raised himself from the time he was like three or four.
Okay.
And he ran wild all over Redwood City, which is where Julian lives.
Right.
Or grew up. But he had no real support in terms of, hey, you know, structure.
Yeah.
But this guy coveted structure.
Right.
So he said, when I have a kid, my kid's never going to lack for structure.
Right.
So basically, Julian grew up.
That's relevant.
With the cane.
Right.
All the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's stories, there are multiple stories of their interactions physically and right. just the way he was raised. And Frank looks back on it and goes, you know, it's too hard. And it's hard when you look at it, you're parenting, I'm parenting, people listening to it are. How do you do it right? There's no friggin' handbook, especially if you're a guy who grew up with no friggin' parents. And you're in the 50s.
Yes.
And he did the best he could. And he was a friggin' maniac.
Well, don't you think, this is the way I think of it anyway, so my dad's dad would hit the kids a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Well, this especially hit my dad's older brother. He was the oldest, so he would take the brunt of it and take it for his brothers. And my dad would never touch us ever. That's why. But I do think you go one way or the other. I think it's extremes. I think you either emulate your dad exactly, or you go the exact opposite way. My dad chose to go the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. Now I go the exact opposite way. Him, I beat the shit out of my kids.
Well, that,
left and right. That, I mean, because they ask for it.
It skips a generation.
That's exactly that. No, but I do think that that's sort of, I mean, you know, I don't know about your upbringing, but I never witnessed that. But I can't imagine, you know, I mean, so Edelman, but at the same time, I'm guessing in a weird way that toughened Edelman up.
And he embraced it.
Right.
And he loved it. And him and his brother Jason.
Well, I can't imagine he loved getting hit.
No, he didn't. But when he tells the stories of they would religiously go to the baseball fields because right. baseball was where all the shit happened.
Right.
They'd go to the fields. He'd come home from work. They would drive around, try to find the open field. Once they found the open field, they'd start pitching to him.
Right.
Julian had a habit of trying to pull shit, or he'd make bad decisions. His dad would get pissed at him. Julian would get pissed back, and it turned into a shitstorm. And finally, when Julian was 15, they got in a fist fight because Julian charged the mound and, you know, tried to attack his dad. His dad took him down. Basically, he had just gotten braces. He shows up at the game because it was taking BP before the game. He shows up at the game. Blood all over his jersey. Like, what happened, Frank? Well, you know what happened. Jesus. Same thing that always happens.
And now they're okay, though?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Right. No issues at all?
I mean, the guy is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I got to know him. I spoke to him a ton.
How many people did you talk to for the book?
I would say 25 to 30.
Yeah, did you talk to Brady?
Yep.
Kraft.
Belichick, again, he was willing to do it, and he is... he's present there with a blurb on the back, but we were on such a time constraint. It was supposed to be in July 15th, so everybody was scattered to the winds, that I wasn't able to get Belichick. I got Kraft, Matt Slater, who, believe it or not, he and Julian are best friends.
Really?
I had no idea.
No, I didn't know. I mean, how would I know that? I wouldn't know that.
Who else? Amendola. So there's a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's the upbringing, the kids that he grew up with, the people in college who really understand how this guy kind of willed himself to do what he did, and how much of an asshole he was, that he self-admitted asshole, that he just didn't care if people didn't like him because he was like his dad. He was going to just force things to go the way he wanted them to.
Did he ever talk to those, I guess those have been his aunts, or no? Am I wrong?
Oh, the deaf kid? No, I didn't talk.
No, you. Edelman never. I'm saying, did he ever meet them or have a relationship with them? Or no? Are they alive?
Two of three, I believe, are alive. One had meningitis at some point when she was young.
Then, right.
And Julian, actually, his father freaked out. That's another side story. Julian was diagnosed with meningitis when he was a baby, and his father freaked out about that.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So a lot of depth to it, The one great thing about this, Kirk, is that this is a book that is really the first one that's a full tell-all by a guy who's on the Patriots while he's still playing. Bruschi did one after his stroke, but that really focused on the stroke. Right. And Gronk did one with his agent that was...
It's a terrific read.
Yeah.
It's one of the great books of all time.
So,
but I mean, is Edelman... Because when you talk to these players now, and you deal with them, and we talk to him on the air, whatever. I mean, is Edelman, do you get the sense, even still, when you're talking to this guy who you know about a book that he knows has to be on this, does he hold back a little bit when he talks about the operations of the Patriots?
No, he didn't.
Let me ask you this. When it comes out, will this piss off people in the Patriot organization? Will a guy like Belichick say, why are you saying this?
See, that's the thing, is he tells a lot of behind-the-scenes stories.
Look, give me a good one.
I would guess that his relationship with Welker was an interesting one.
Didn't like him?
Welker wasn't having it. Welker was, and I spoke to Welker for the book too. And, you know, Welker said, you know, in the sidebar, one of the things he said is, You know, Julian's different, and that's he's kind of a guy you have to get used to. He's an acquired taste.
It wasn't so much that he was an understudy and that upset him, or
no, it drove him fucking crazy.
Right.
He just was always just going a million miles an hour, million questions. And Welker was more of an understated guy. And like,
right.
I remember Julian said, you know, he'd be in a line, he'd always made sure to take the rep behind Welker,
right,
so he could watch what Welker did. And one time Julian asked Welker a question. Welker goes, how about this? Why don't you just watch the fucking coach and then do what he tells you to?
Right. Was that, is that scene in that one that Belichick did with the NFL Network, that two-parter, remember? When
Do Your Job, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm talking about the one, was it Do Your Job 1, 10 years, 7, 8 years ago?
Whenever
the Ravens year.
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And Welker's hurt, and Edelman has that great game behind in the preseason, and he talks about Wally Pipp or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Belichick says something to Welker, and Welker's like, yeah, good for him. And Belichick's like, yeah, way to be competitive, and just walks
right
away.
Welker talks about that.
Oh, yeah.
It actually bothered him in hindsight.
Yeah.
And he actually said about Bill, he goes, well, that's predictable Bill, you know, I don't know who it is, and he makes it sound like I don't give a
right,
shit.
Right. Who's a better player?
Edelman.
I think so too. He's a better football player. Although you forget how good Welker was, though.
Oh, he was incredible.
At his best, he was unbelievable with that team. 122 passes.
Yeah.
A couple of times he had 120 catches.
He had 1,500 friggin' yards in 2011.
That's insane.
But I think the interesting thing is, and that's where it circles back to Edelman, is when Welker was leaving in 2012, instead of saying, well, Julian, you're our guy, they signed him to a minimum offer, and he had to go to the New York Giants.
He went to the Giants,
he
right.
He was very close to signing there.
I was going
to
ask you, it's funny, so I was going to ask you that. So he walks into that. I remember reading and tweeting, you guys were all tweeting that day. He's at the Giants facility. And I remember thinking at the time, who gives a shit?
Right.
I mean, that's the way the Patriots roll, whatever. He's going to go. They're bringing somebody else. Was he doing that because he wanted the Patriots? Did he want to stay with the Patriots, or was he prepared to sign with the Giants? Was that going to happen?
He was prepared to sign with the Giants, and Ben Rawitz, who's
Brady's
very close with Brady, and very close with Edelman, they sat. Rawitz told me that, you know, Edelman was at his house just kind of crying about the decision and just wrenched about it. And Brady eventually said, you know what, come back, trust me. I'll make it work. Trust me, it will be the best thing you do. Don't go. And but he was friggin' close, and he felt, you know, kind of a little jilted. He was also very close to signing with the Niners after that 2013 season.
Right.
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Was it's a funny story in there about Jim Harbaugh during their meeting out there. He says to him, you know, he goes, I'm not supposed to do this, but what's it going to take to get this done with you? So Julian like threw out a number. And said, no wonder the Trump-Alke thing didn't work.
What was I going to say? Oh, Brady. So we were talking before this podcast here. I was talking about how Brady's on with us still every week, and I don't think right now he's that crazy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder at what point does Brady just say, screw it. And you said, you know, Ian says he's a company guy. I forget the phrase he used.
He's an infantryman.
He's an infantryman. I mean, stuff like that over the years, you know, he's close with Edelman, obviously. But even back then, he's not going to step in and say that Belichick or Kraft signed this guy.
No.
Other quarterbacks would and have, obviously, in the history of the league. That's just never been the way he's operated on.
No. And that's
Edelman's okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, Edelman is of the same mind. I mean, that's the way he was raised with that
right
player, coach, father, kid, all that stuff. Very, very simple. We're not friends. We're not sharing. And that's why you see Belichick and Brady, and they're not as close right now as you probably would say, you know, Belichick and Harrison are, or Belichick and any number of players who have moved on. And I think that'll come later, but I wouldn't consider their relationship to be exceptionally close.
He told us he's never spent time socially with Belichick ever. I mean, they played Pebble Beach or whatever, but that was arranged. He's never had dinner with him individually. That's what he said.
I mean,
you know, that seems, you just think of them as the greatest, you know, pairing of all time. But then again, I don't know how many times Popovich and Duncan had dinner together.
Yeah, but doesn't that make sense when you look at the history, the military history of shit? When you look at Belichick growing up in the place that he did, Naval
right
Academy, and
yeah,
there's a chain of command, and you can't be fraternizing with the...
True. That's true. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Because it's not going to help you. It's not going to help you with the rest of the locker room.
Do you think anybody's, and I guess Halberstam did it to some extent, but that's a long time ago, and Belichick's done a lot since then. Is somebody going to sit down, will Belichick sit down with somebody at some point?
I can't imagine.
One of these my life stories?
I have to, because he gives a shit about the history of the league. You look at the library that he has in his home, you look at the access he's given NFL films, and you have to say, at some point he will. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he doesn't write it himself to a large extent.
Right. What about Brady? I'm not counting this thing. I mean, an actual book where it's about, you know. I'm not talking about night
shoots. I would think Brady will at some point.
Yeah, you gonna try and get in that?
I don't know, man. I mean, I'm.
Did you enjoy this process?
I did, but like I said, I'm just sometimes I'm pretty easily daunted. I mean, I'd like to write a Brady book. Christ, it'd be good for the business.
I would say.
But you know, I get daunted by like, would I do the whole thing justice? Would I be able to do the right job for it? And then what I would inevitably do is somebody else would get the book, and I'd be like, well, shit, I could have done a better job than him. So,
right.
Again, stop being a pussy about
Has there been a book in those 10 years where you said, since the 07, you said, shit, I should have written that one. This guy wrote this.
Yeah, Michael wrote Belichick Brady.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and Ian O'Connor from
is he writing one right
ESPN,
now?
He's been hovering around Belichick for a long time.
He's been writing a lot of Brady Belichick stories the last
few
years.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time, and I don't
the other
know
guy's
diligent.
Writing Brady, the the DC guy. He wrote a New York Times Magazine story about Brady. Leibovich?
Oh, yeah.
He's writing one, right?
Yeah, he and I have become really good friends during the process, and he's actually excellent. I mean, do you like his writing?
I read the DC one he did a couple of years ago. What the hell's the name of it? I don't know. I read it. It was pretty good.
He is, I don't want to talk out of turn regarding his structure, but we talked last Thursday before the game, and so much has happened since 2014 when he started it that I think his vision has widened on the whole thing. And
sure.
It's more of a league thing, but I think the Brady and Belichick are going to be a massive part of it. But that's going to be a great book.
Well, what's it going to be about? The league? Goodell?
Where it is.
Where the league is?
Goodell, the ownership level, how the league feeds on itself.
That can change a lot between the publication of a book and the release of a book. I would think that's a hard one to write.
The whole league could tear its ACL. You never know.
Are you with me at all? That's true. Are you with me at all? We'll get back to the book in a second. I feel like Charlie Rose right now.
This is fun.
Yes, I'm enjoying it. Are you with me at all in that Kraft kind of tried to play both sides in this Goodell thing? I mean, you can't call press conferences. You can't, and then all of a sudden be part of a committee that gives this guy a new deal.
I think what's fascinating is I thought that it started in May of 2015 when he said, I stand with the owners. And what happened there was he got with that group at the Ritz-Carlton in San Francisco.
You mean like the Rooneys? And
they looked, they kind of gave him the high hat.
Right.
And he felt like he might have felt in 1992, 93, or 94. He felt like the outsider again. And I think a few people put their arm around him and tried to talk sense to him and said, we'll work something out, which is what Kraft himself has said.
Sure.
I thought I would be able to you know, manufacture in politic. And it didn't happen. And he got sold a bill of goods there. So once he realized the reaction in New England to him doing that was that he sold Brady out.
Right.
He tried to put the toothpaste back in the tube by going on the offensive against Goodell. The fact of it is, Robert and Jonathan don't believe that Goodell is necessarily the fully guilty party.
Well, who is?
The lieutenants below him.
Well,
operations.
Who's in charge of those guys? Ultimately.
Ultimately, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, who's in charge of you? I mean,
nobody.
They're not
right alone. Well, sure.
That's right.
Everybody, I understand. Everybody has a boss. I get that.
Yeah. So when you go off the rails, you know.
Yeah, but I get in trouble.
Yeah, right. But.
So what's your point?
Him being off the rails, as far as the crafts were concerned, was the lieutenant level of the NFL saying, you know what? They've been doing this shit and thumbing their nose at you since 2007 and getting away with it. If you let them get away with it, do you know how many shit storms we're going to have on the horizon?
Right.
With Dallas, with the Maras, with the Rooneys, with the Richardsons.
Yeah.
So make him take his medicine here. We're going to make him take his medicine.
Do you talk about the Flakegate in the book?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he good on that?
Very.
Yeah. Honest? He's not a fan of Goodell's, I'm guessing, or no?
He didn't seem to be.
No. Because, I mean, you know, we've never really had Brady say anything about it with us.
No, he was very good.
Yeah.
He was very good about how angry it was, angering it was.
So you're writing this book while you're doing a new TV show, right? Trying to be a beat writer for the Patriots, sort of, whatever the title is.
Yeah, kind of.
That's moved
now. Phil, yeah, now that I'm doing the night show, Phil Perry has kind of...
You're more of an entertainer now. You're more like Merv Griffin, I would say.
I would say that. I think I'm an information purveyor.
If Merv Griffin and Mike Reese had a baby, I think that it would be... I'd like to watch that conception, I think. Maybe that's just me. Between all that and then you're cranking out this book... Like, I mean, when you're done with the book, who's the first person who reads it? You give it to Edelman? Do you read it? Obviously, you read it, but who reads it?
Oh, you mean the rough draft?
Yeah, you're done with it. What happens? Publisher?
Done with it? Editor? The publisher reads it as I go, because we had to do it so quickly. He was reading the chapters as I was finishing
it. One of these things that at first is too many pages, and they say you got to cut the shit out.
Yeah, right. We don't really care that his grandparents emigrated from,
Yes.
They're German descent, then they were in Sweden, and then they moved to Canada, to Kitchener, Ontario, down to... We don't really... That's nice.
Was there anything in there that he said to you that later on... Obviously, you can't say now, maybe, but he said to you, we can't use that, we got to take this out, or no?
Jesus, that's a great question. Yeah. A whole shitload of fucks.
Oh, no fucks are allowed?
Well, when I did the search... See, I just said I'm going to do... Between... Adding in all the historical stuff and adding in everything he said, I said, you know what? I'm going to throw everything. I've never written a book before, so I'm going to send it in just as the books that I read.
Yeah.
And let them deal with it. So when Julian's agent, Carter, read it, Carter Chow, he said, you know, I'm looking at this, and my 11-year-old daughter's going to read this. And there's just an awful lot of fucks. I said, well, some of them are gratuitous and some of them are necessary. There were 57, so I winnowed it down to only conversational ones that were reflective of, you know, moments or things. Generally, they were in quotes, so somebody actually said them. So that was really the only thing, content-wise, that we pulled out.
How about when you write a book with a guy, you have a relationship with a guy, does it bother you, does it get in your head at all, what happens... 2 years from now, I'm doing my show, and he gets popped for PEDs, or he hits his girlfriend or something. Can I be fair on this story?
If I hadn't been doing it this long, it would be way harder for me.
Yeah.
But I think there's a difference between me and a Times beat writer, or a Times NFL reporter, or a, you know, Jim McBride.
Right.
Or, you know, we've so much morphed from... being strictly the factual beat writer. I'm asked to give perspective now. If something like that happened, I think I'd be able to give better perspective.
But do you consider him a friend?
Yeah, I guess so.
Is that odd? Do you feel that's odd? Given he's a player, do you not care? Would you have cared 10 years ago?
Look, I consider him a friend, a professional acquaintance.
Right.
You know?
So you have no problem blasting him if something happens?
It probably wouldn't be an outright, I don't believe in his level of character.
Right. You know, like this thing that happened to him, whatever that was. When was that?
Yeah, he went into great detail on that, 2011.
Some skirt, a girl, he allegedly grabbed a girl or something like that. Right? Is that right?
Yep.
The right story. So that's in there as well.
Yep.
So that happens.
He broached it. I was surprised how much he broached it and spoke about it.
So that means, I mean, that happens today, you would be comfortable talking about it.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But that's the thing is, you have to, and that's what I think is a failure on our part in the media right now, because we're 24/7, I'd want to know. And if I got on TV that night and said, look, I need to have more of the facts of exactly what happened. It doesn't work.
Right.
Because you look at the, you know, last week the Michael Bennett thing happened, and, you know, we're in the office, and there are people in our office who were just outraged. And I said, I really just, you know, it looks terrible, and I don't understand what it's like. I've never been pinned to the ground, and I know that it is, I've read, you know, the broken windows theories of policing and all the shit that went on in New York, Matt Taibbi, and I understand how much damage that did. But until I know why this one particular person in a sea of people who had heard gunshots was asked to get on the ground, then I need to know more. And I think people weren't accepting that there's a rush to find out. Now, are we ever going to find out exactly what the Las Vegas Police Department alleges
probably
happened?
Probably not. And to be honest, if he finds out that the Bennett's not telling the truth, it'll just go away.
Right.
I mean, LeBron James' story just went away. And that's ultimately, we talk about a lot in the show, is, you know, I just want proof. That's all. Just give me, just, I'm looking at it from, give me, I'm not saying I don't believe somebody says something or I don't, you know, but can we wait for proof before we rush to, before we, I mean, journalistically, I'm surprised at some of these.
And that's the same way we get, that's why, you know, we got here was because of an, you know, hypothetical instance with a player that I developed a relationship with. I'd want to know all the shit that happened.
Right.
Like, for instance, take Guerrero, for instance. We have a caricature of him that we resort to frequently when his name comes up.
Alex Guerrero.
Yeah, he's a witch doctor. He's, you know.
Well, I mean, we have some proof, too. I mean, he was peddling fake cancer juice. I mean,
that truth, that fact, has moved through a filter and become viewed through one way. Now, was
well, I think I've been a big part of moving it that way.
No doubt. Right. But has it, which is, I wouldn't bring it up to you if you hadn't.
Right, okay.
I asked him about it. He didn't want to go into chapter and verse on it because he figured it was counterproductive.
You talked about this book?
No, I didn't.
No.
I wanted to, but again, right. Fucking ridiculous time crunch. But,
yeah.
Yep. The way he stated it to me when I've spoken to him in the past is, look, he didn't want to be portrayed as a doctor. The person who did that shit way back portrayed him as a doctor without his consent.
Okay, but he's still selling this obviously bogus bullshit cancer stuff.
Yeah, but you say it's obviously bogus. If he believes it to be helpful in combating, I mean, there's a point at which
but that's
stage four metastasized. Well, I'm not sure that he's going to walk up to him and say, "Well, I got something that's going to."
Well,
fix
I understand
it.
My sensitivity is probably heightened toward it, but I am saying that, you know, that's not. But you're also painting in the way that that's not the way he pitched it. I mean, I've read the transcripts of the stuff he sold before. It's not like he said, "Well, if you just got diagnosed and if it's stage one or two, come on over here."
Well, you know what? Then that's probably where I'm coming up short because I haven't read the transcripts.
About yeah.
Pitching.
And, you know, he's obviously had some financial dealings. And mm-hmm. I would just say for me, and like, you like Guerrero. I mean, you think it works?
I've spent time with him.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I totally get that. But what I would say is, like, other than the Boston Magazine story, I am personally surprised that Tom Brady and you have, this is right here, the TB12 method.
The reason it's here, I just got the friggin' thing in my house today when I was walking out.
He's look at those eyes. He's looking right at me.
He is looking right at me.
I feel like Jim Gray.
We got recipes.
Oh, Jesus. God.
All right, go ahead.
That looks good. Where's the long-form story in some big publication about Guerrero in his past? It is an interesting story. He's tied in with the most famous athlete on the planet, who right now is writing a book, in essence, Guerrero is his business partner and really the co-author of the book. Mm-hmm. I mean, philosophically, right?
Right.
I mean, that's interesting to me, sort of a deep dive into Guerrero.
Deep dive into where he came from. Who first believed in him, where he learned what he learned, who he first incorporated himself with.
All his fuck-ups, too.
Absolutely, right, all his fuck-ups. The same fuck-ups with Julian Edelman at Storyville in 2011. The same fuck-ups with, you know, Tom Brady and Tara Reid or whoever else would be.
Well, I would say that.
But shine a light on it and allow the context to be given. See, when I brought that up, it was more of get the full context.
Sure, I want that. And we've tried to have Guerrero on 3 million times. He'll never do it. I mean, that's not going to happen.
It's too bad.
Well, I don't blame. I understand. It's a trap. It's a tough spot for him. Do you find? I think I asked you this last time you were on the podcast. Do you find Brady harder to deal with now than 10 years ago?
No, I don't.
Just as easy?
Yeah.
Really? So you can go up and talk to him?
Yep. But there's more people in the locker room.
But he used to do a lot of locker room spots, right?
If you walk up to him and say you got a second, he'll talk to you.
Yeah.
I just think it's just an insane. I think now more than ever, because he is at this stage of his career and he's won 5 Super Bowls, and he is at this point where he can see the finish line, that he does want to transition toward, all right, I have to do something from the age of 43 to the age of 75.
Right.
What's it going to be? And he's more concerned with managing. As you point out with your spot, he's going to manage his message more.
Yeah.
Is this boring? Is this a boring podcast?
I don't think so. Do you?
No, I'm enjoying it.
Absolutely.
But didn't friggin' Jerry complain last time it was boring?
Oh, my God. Who am I dealing with? Everybody worries about shit. What do you care? What do you care what Jerry Callahan thinks? He's talking about being.
Well, I want your product to be good.
He's fucking wild. It'll be fine.
Jerry's, I want your product. I don't care. Jerry is.
You're good.
Wait, Jerry's default fucking setting is to complain.
You don't like Jerry?
I like Jerry.
You do?
I have a lot of friends with default settings to complain.
I'm just wondering if you like Jerry personally or not. You do? Do you know him personally the way in, really, if you like him or not? Do you have that kind of relationship with him? He's a good friend
of mine.
I think
he's knee-jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, he's all right. He's okay.
He's good friends with a girl I went to college with. So if she signs off on him personally.
Who don't you like in the media? Go ahead. Let's do it. You want to get this thing interesting? Let's fucking start naming some names. Don't fuck around here. Let's go. Don't pussy out. I know you said a couple of times you're a pussy. Don't be a goddamn pussy. Be a man.
I don't know if it's worth
the
headache.
Put your pants on. Just put your goddamn fucking pants on.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's worth the headache.
I do it all the time.
Yeah.
That's how I make a living.
I know. Look how much hair you have left.
It's true.
We haven't made eye contact the entire time.
I'm not big on that. You know that, though.
Eye contact?
Yeah. That's not my thing.
Yeah, but it hints at the level of anxiety you have. So that's the life you're leading right now.
We get along fine.
You and me?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you've
great.
You've always liked me.
I've always liked you.
Yeah, from day one. You said, this guy's he's a riser. He's a cummer.
So
you came up to me and said, you're a cummer one time.
I did not say that. Did I say that?
No, you did not.
That was my best tweet. My best tweet of the weekend.
What's that?
I said, holy crap, the Texans suck. Some guy tweets at me, Deshaun Watson's coming. And I said, well, once he gets cleaned up, they better get him out there.
You don't do much radio anymore, though, now that you're doing all this TV, right?
Now I am.
You
now
are.
The football started.
What are you doing?
I did I'm going to do Friday night 6 to 8 with Mutt and Keefe.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What are you doing?
That's quick.
Where are you doing it?
I'm coming up to Brighton.
And you're going to schlep over to Burlington?
No. Friday night's going to be a night off because I have to work Sundays.
Oh, okay.
So Kevin Miller said, you're not going to be running around doing radio from 6 to 8 and coming up
Kevin
here.
Kevin Miller, yeah, I remember him.
Head still has the same amount of hair as he had previously.
Yeah.
Not
there
a lot.
You missed me at Comcast. You missed me over there.
I think you'll liven things up.
I think so, too. I think I should start going on about 10:30 on weeknights, maybe. And get up at 4.
That'd be funny.
It's not my kind of show.
Honest to God, why?
It's too sporto for me. You know that.
Oh, there's a ton of grab ass.
Kind of, but it's sort of like TV grab ass.
TV grab ass
is different than this
grab
ass.
Not only is there grab assery, there's grab ass segments. We get into, plenty of...
You're not doing that thing where Holly's a judge anymore, are you?
You know what? You have to take swings.
I thought it was funny. That's expired?
It has not been... No, it's not expired. It's on the back burner.
I think maybe we should... Call the day.
It might, you know what? Now it's going to be. Now it's going to be exhumed.
I'm not going to watch. I also think there's a little bit of you guys kind of treat Giles like I'm better than you, sort of thing going on with him. Like shut the fuck up.
I hear you.
A little bit of that. Yep. Let him breathe a little bit. I don't think he's got a lot to offer anyway. So then you get rid of him. Then let him talk more. Then you'll prove your point.
No.
You see, that's how I would do it.
Occasions where I.
The girl's good though.
Casey's great.
She's
but there
excellent.
Are occasions where I say something to Giles or I cut him off at the knees. I'm like, oh, you prick. Let him finish what he's saying.
I think you get a little too NFL expert sometimes.
I overbluster.
A little bit. And then you're a good guy, so I know it's not like
that. I overbluster. There's times I can't. See, I don't have to watch the show afterwards because I honestly cannot stand my TV persona.
What do you mean? Like the sort of wacky... What does that mean? Yeah, what is... There's not... I mean, sometimes you amplify, but not all the time.
I don't know.
But why do you have to do that?
I don't have to.
Why do you always have to be on?
I think you just put on a suit. You just put on, this is my TV, this is what I'm going to do now. I mean, not 100% of the time. I think we all do
that to some extent.
Well, you have to.
Right? I mean, you got to dance. And with the, just say fuck.
I can't disagree.
I mean, why? I mean, if you're going to swear, which seems a little forced anyway.
Yeah, it's funny.
Because if you're going to say, you feel like you're doing it. But then if you're not saying fuck, that's the only swear that matters.
Well, that's funny because Dale was very much, has seemingly been very much up in arms about the swearing.
Why?
Because he, same thing, he thinks it's forced. And he said that to
me. Well, it is forced. I mean, one day you were told you could swear, obviously.
No, that's not true.
Well, obviously that happened because you started swearing one day. I mean, you guys, I think these consultants came in. I said this on the air.
I know, I heard this.
Are you denying this happened?
Completely.
You're calling me a liar?
Whoever told you this was a liar because you weren't there.
Triple sourced.
Triple wrong.
Excellent sources. Casey Smith was one of them.
She certainly was. Because I laughed about it when I heard it. I said it to Holly. I was like, allegedly a focus group came in and told us.
Focus group came in, yes, yes.
The only guy we've had is a former guy from ESPN, Jerry Madelon, who's a media guy, and he doesn't like the swearing.
Okay.
But initially when we were starting, we said, we want to push the envelope. I said, does that mean swearing? It's after 9, it's cable. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I can show you emails where they say, okay, that's enough with that particular
Are you X amount of swears per show?
No, but I called Giles Cheese Dick, and they thought that was gratuitous, which goes back to your point about, you know, let him breathe.
But that's okay. That's breaking balls, though. I mean, if he's being a cheese dick, you can call him that.
But
I say dick on the radio. You can say it on TV.
No, I know, but cheese dick seemed a little bit over the top.
The fuck is not allowed.
No.
Why is that? Like, why is shit allowed and not fuck? What's the difference? Because it's an act?
Yeah.
Shitting is an act.
Well, like, we can, for instance...
By the way, last time you were on the podcast, let me be clear about this. You were worried that you were going to swear on the podcast.
No, I wasn't.
Yes, you were before it started. You said, I'm worried that...
I was worried there were going to be third rail topics brought up.
You don't care about that anymore.
No, because I swore on the last podcast.
But you don't care about third rail topics. Are they open now? Like, what? What were you worried about?
I don't want to get into that whole conversation about other people's stuff. Like, the drama and the shit. Like, no one cares.
Do I look at my paycheck?
See, this is...
I can assure you, people care.
This is why you were... See, this is what you've done. You wanted to be a screenwriter.
Right.
When you decided that wasn't going to work, you decided to write anyway, and now you became a radio host. And what you've done...
Yeah, but you make like this is grand plan.
Yeah, but... It's worked out perfectly.
Yeah, but you say nobody cares about
parachuted in as a screenwriter, it still brought fucking screenwriter sensibilities into this arena.
Yeah, but when you
say now you're an insider,
when you say nobody cares, you know that's not true. I had the same fight with Dale a month ago on the podcast.
You know what? Absolutely,
the numbers,
everyone cares.
Of course they do.
Everyone cares.
You're not a huge gossip, though.
I don't like to.
I've tried to with you, and I've sensed some coldness. So I'm like, I'm not going to bother him. He doesn't like to do that.
I know.
Although occasionally I'll rip somebody with me. I'll say, fuck this guy.
Yeah, I just don't trust other people's input on stuff.
Why not?
Because I want to find out for myself.
Yeah, but you can say have a conversation with somebody and say, this guy sucks.
Yeah, but I want to be sure that he sucks.
Is there somebody on the beat who's on the beat all the time right now, you think this guy sucks?
Nobody that I lacerate like that.
Everybody hates Ben Bowman. Not me, by the way.
He doesn't have a lot of self-awareness.
What do you mean?
How hard is that to understand?
I think I understand. I just want you to shit on him more. That's when I do that. I'm just waiting for you to talk more about it.
I just don't think... I think he's...
You don't like him?
I think he's completely detached... I think he's completely detached from what the things that he says will cause to have happen. Or the reaction that there will be to them. And then he's surprised...
Or is he smarter than you think and he's actually playing an act where he acts surprised? Where he wants to stir up shit. And he says, oh my God, I didn't think this was going to happen. Or am I giving... Would that be giving too much credit?
In my opinion, that might be giving him a little too much credit, but again.
Okay. Volan made me think of something. This is good because Volan, because he wrote when Hernandez died that he was a nice guy who, whatever, the date Hernandez, remember that. Did Edelman talk about Hernandez at all?
Yes.
Because, I mean, I think about that. We've never really had a chance to talk to Brady about it. It's never really fitted. I want to ask him. He wouldn't give a great answer probably at this point. I mean, Edelman was in meetings with this guy
mm-hmm.
for years.
Yeah.
Three, 4 years, and knows a guy who killed people and is in jail for the rest of his life. Has
not
he ever
anymore.
Tried?
Hmm? Not anymore.
Well, I understand that, but at the... Oh, I guess by the time you already sat down with him, you'd already killed
yep.
himself. Did he ever try and have contact with him or no?
I didn't ask what the relationship was.
What was the relationship like as teammates?
He liked him.
He did?
He liked him because of the competitive nature of Hernandez. But Hernandez, you know... Through Edelman's, and I don't want to give away everything,
no, book,
but you know, he had some good insight into he could be pretty acidic and acerbic on the field with his teammates.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he was shocked when he.
Not like it. Yeah, and he did not downplay the level of distraction that it posed to everybody. How shocking it was! I mean, that happened in June. You're back at camp in July.
Was he at the White House? Edelman.
This past year?
Yeah. That's the day he killed himself. I'm just saying because we were down there for it.
Can't remember.
No.
I didn't ask him about the White House. No, I did ask him about the White House. I don't know. Went chronological. See what I was saying? I don't remember shit.
Jesus Christ.
That's why I wrote it down. It's in a book.
It's a good move.
Pick it up. Move. It's in the book.
I am going to pick this book up. It comes out
October 24th. So I only swore a bunch. I lacerated Ben Volan mildly.
You did fine. Mildly.
You hit Giles. Giles is actually pretty good.
Did you hear Giles... Giles is doing a weekend show. Did you hear about this?
No.
On EEI. Maybe 2 months ago. And I was driving around with my son because I'm a lousy parent. I was in the Red Sox post game. And he's like, you know, whatever, reading a book or pretending he's a wrestler. And Giles was doing this terrible, like, it's not his fault. He's doing this terrible wrap-up Red Sox post-game show, which is for, I would say, average listener, about 84 at that mm-hmm. point. And I'm thinking, you know, you can talk. Like, just talk about stuff. You don't have to just go over the box score and say, hey, you know, you got to pitch better and whatever. So I called the station as Dick from Upton and did a voice of, hello? You hear this or no?
No.
And I called and talked to him, and I said to him something like, I've been having a generations-long argument with my son. I think pitching 66% of the game, he thinks it's 64% of the game. You be the judge. I mean, I felt bad for him because everyone says he's a nice guy. I like him. He's a nice guy. I've dealt with him. But I just felt it was such a – I felt bad for him. I'm like, what – like, I don't know. I feel like that sports talk – he's too young. He shouldn't be fucking doing that.
But here's the thing. This is that transition. And this is – if he was younger – he would probably be different. But the fact is, he's like 30 or 31. The ladder that I was on as a writer is gone.
Dead.
But he was on that ladder when it burned up underneath him. So he's still half an anchor and half an opinion purveyor. And he's going to get better at it.
Right.
And we're all going to get better at it. But it's just...
Well, you're kind of at the start of it, though. You jumped ahead of it, though.
That's because I was at Metro West, and when I was there... I used to write like 5 or 6 stories off a game. And my boss's name was Russ Lode. He used to say, write like Borges, write for A1 like Shaughnessy. I would write a fucking on football like Borges analysis thing for sports, but then I would do an A1 column, which really was just Shaughnessy knockoff for everybody.
Right.
And then I'd write, you know, a news story or something else. So it was...
Oh, you don't like Shaughnessy?
I actually like him better than I did.
Oh, yeah, because I remember I walked in one time. You guys were having a big fucking fight.
Oh, you were there that day?
Yeah, I was all excited. I was like, this is fantastic. And I went and got both sides, and I think I probably shit on you when I talked to him, and shit on him when I talked to you, and covered all my corners, and then I just did my show and left. Felt fully satisfied.
I can't remember what it was.
It was some dumb thing. I forget what it was. But occasionally...
So he threw me, do you have a problem with me? Because I made fun of him on the radio.
He's sensitive, though.
He said, you have a problem? I said, as a matter of fact, I do.
Right, I remember this. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But he's not, I mean, he'll be missed, though.
Oh, my God. I mean
it's all Ron, work, too, though.
Oh, I love Ron. I mean, the work that Shaughnessy did, see, that's the thing, is there's not a lot of hidebound journalism taking place in the market.
Not a lot.
And it's hard. I think Evan Drellick's excellent.
Oh, me too. Oh, I like Drellick.
But that's the thing, is you need to devote your time.
But he's also an opinion guy.
He is.
Right.
You take Bob Holler, or even better, for people who even remember him, Bob Holmes. And those were guys who just really pull the covers up over their head.
Right.
And they report it. And we don't have as much time to do that anymore.
That's gone.
Because it's just, it's hard.
Yeah.
People don't want to talk about it. They're even more resistant to it now. Laying it all bare. Have we gone out too long?
You're good. Where you got
to go? I don't know. You're just playing with your forehead. Like
I'm odd. Have you not come to this realization yet in our time we spent together that you're not dealing with somebody who's...
No, I know that, but I'm odd too. So I'm trying to follow the nonverbals and put you at ease.
I'm fine. I'm still a little upset about the Springsteen thing, but I haven't really listened since you've said that.
When did you start listening to Springsteen?
So...
Year.
So my... End of... born in the USA. I was 9.
Me too. I wasn't 9, though.
You were not 9. No, you were 23. my aunt Sandra, my mom's sister, was married to Uncle Steve since divorce. Divorced very soon after they got married. But, you know, I was listening to Born in the USA when it came out. Because for me, at that time, my mom would go to the Billerica Mall where I lived at the time. She'd give me a couple of dollars. It was a record store. I'd get 1 or 2 45s, basically the ones that came out that week they heard on the radio. So if it was, you know, 99 Red Balloons or Human League, I thought Bruce Springsteen was like the new, like, human, like, oh, who's this new guy? Like, what is this? And my Uncle Steve was a massive fan from, like, 75.
Yep.
And he was like, no, there's more there. And I kind of started going backwards, but I was so into Born USA for, like, 2 or 3 years, it didn't matter. But then after that, I really never left. I never went anywhere else. I kind of had a point at, like, 84. There was 2 roads, right? You see right here? I could have gone, it was Van Halen or Springsteen at that point. I remember I was 10.
Really?
Yeah, so Van Halen was fucking awesome. I'll Wait and Jump in Panama and Huffer Teacher. I'm 10 years old. But I felt the pull. I think Michael was a big part of it. The pull of Bruce. So I, luckily, imagine if I was a fucking diehard Van Halen fan at this point.
It's tough.
Fucked. So Bruce, and he's the greatest. And I agree. A little bit of that book is odd. But some of the stuff, the chapter, you read the whole book.
Yeah.
The chapter where his dad dies and he says goodbye to his dad and all that stuff.
Yep.
Is awesome writing. I think that's a great chapter. I read that chapter. I've read that chapter 50 times.
Really?
Yeah. I read it all the time.
Huh.
You busy? What are you doing? breaking stories?
I haven't done shit in an hour.
Last time we were on, the podcast ended and Brady's suspension got... Remember that got upheld or changed or some fucking thing?
Yeah, that was the first time we did.
The first time, the whole thing.
Have we done three?
Two.
We did three.
Two.
Yeah, the Brady thing got reinvoked.
Yes.
Reinstalled.
Yes.
Aren't you going to ask me what I'm reading?
I was about to ask you what you're reading.
I just finished The Executioner's Song by Norman Mailer.
Just in time.
Gary Gilmore.
Great book.
Have you read that?
Yes, I read that book my freshman year in college.
Holy shit.
A little thorough, right. A little too much.
But when you have a Kindle going, you don't know how much is left. So yeah, you just keep flipping.
I think we talked about this last time. I can't.
You just keep flipping.
I need a book in my hands. Yeah, how many pages is that on a Kindle?
I have no idea.
3,000?
It was 1,000 on regular.
The physical books.
Have you ever read the four John Updike Rabbit books?
You Run, Rabbit, Run. And I'm not a big Updike fan.
Oh, my God.
I'm not a big Updike fan.
I don't understand why you wouldn't be.
Is there hints of Updike in this book?
No, not at all. But that was what I read before. I just plowed through the.
You're probably like me. You grew up. You read a shitload of sports biographies, right?
Yep.
Is there a model you had in mind when you wrote this one or no? Anything you said? Oh, you know, this kind of. I want it to be like this because let's be honest. There, you could fill this 50 rooms with shitty sports biographies.
Yeah. No. I honestly.
The good ones are. I would say are infrequent. A guy who wrote a great biography was Andre Agassi.
I heard.
Fucking unbelievable. Like, fully. The book is called Open, and that's what it is. He fucking bleeds on the page.
Yeah.
That's what you want, warts and all.
He was pretty good. His 2016 year was very tough.
Good.
He was very
good. Agassi
very
or
tough.
Edelman?
Edelman.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Good. All right. It's called
Relentless. Well,
you can leave. It's fine. Get the fuck out of here.
I gotta go
Relentless.
Do the thing.
Go do your thing. Tonight's a quick slant tonight?
Quick slants. So Mayo's gonna be screaming at me.
Phil Perry, you need to loosen up a little bit?
Phil's great.
I like Phil.
I know you.
Relentless, October 24th, right?
Relentless, October 24th. Hatchet Books, you can pre-order it.
All right, Tommy Curran, as
thanks
always,
for having
we'll
me,
talk
man.
To you soon. Appreciate of course, it. Thank you. All right, thanks again for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. Actually, you know what? I'm really not thankful at all. You should be thanking me. You get this shit every week, these great podcasts, totally free. Do me a favor. Would you go to iTunes, download it, go to Stitcher, do the same, and leave a rating, leave a review. That's where you can help me out. This podcast is going to be number one again. I guarantee it. And you're going to help me along with the process. So for that, I guess at the end, maybe I will thank you. There's a lot of thank yous going back and forth. Here's the point. Fuck you.